I wish Wichita just had a better attitude. I think people are just, we're just have convinced ourselves that we're not as good as we are. And I'm like, no, we're great. We got it. We've got the things we need. Like all of the stuff that we need to be the city we want to be already exists here. And I just wish we could see ourselves for that.
From Kansas.
Welcome back to another episode of the Wichita Life Podcast. My name's Landon. Today's guest is Adam Barlow Thompson from the Neighboring Movement. We talk all about what the Neighboring Movement is, how to be a good neighbor, and how being a good neighbor can really change Wichita from its core. I also learn what the SoCe neighborhood is and what Wichita could look like in 5 or 10 years if we all just decide to be good neighbors. Enjoy my conversation with Adam Barlow Thompson. All right, I'm here with Adam Barlow Thompson. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad we could get this rolling. Can you just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I am the co-founder of the Neighboring Movement and executive director there. Been doing that since 2015, okay. Off and on. I did, had some other things in between. But my wife and I have lived in Wichita since 2010 and grew up in Kansas and... we are, you know, our kind of goal, the thing that we're trying to do in the world is help people connect at a neighborhood level because we think that has the power to change the world.
Sure. So. What part of Kansas are you from?
I grew up in Salina.
Okay.
And my whole extended family's still there. And so still have lots of family relationships.
Not far.
Not far.
Very cool. What did you think of Wichita when you first came here? Because you probably grew up coming to the city or something, right?
I mean, I had growing up, we came to Wichita, very rarely. And I always thought it was definitely Wichita is the big city, and it now is obviously not feel that way, but, but that's what it felt like growing up. And when I moved here, my grandmother was just whatever you do, don't live south of Kellogg. And which is hilarious because now the nonprofit that we run, our main the thing we do in Wichita most is we're trying to activate the neighborhood just south of downtown, which we call SoCe. And so that's where we live. That's where I work. That's where I spend 95% of my time. And it's a great neighborhood. So
that's really funny. I also grew up south of Kellogg, just out in Andover. So a little different. So talk a little bit about your background. What did you go to school for? What did you study? What did you do kind of before the neighborhood movement?
So I went to school at Southwestern College in Winfield. Mm-hmm. And then I went to grad school in Chicago. And my first career was a United Methodist pastor. So I was a pastor for 6 years.
Very cool.
And I actually served a church in Derby during that time. And I think we all mutually agreed that was not the best fit for me.
Sure.
And so we
tried. Hey, you tried.
Gave it my best ever. And they were like, let's do something else. I've always kind of had an entrepreneurial kind of spirit to me. And so even when I was working in the church, I had started a bunch of new initiatives there. And then when it was becoming clear, serving a local church wasn't the way that I was going to be most faithful in my own life and that I was open to other things, then what we ended up doing is I started a consulting business because when you start a nonprofit, you don't make any money.
Sure.
So that was a downer.
There's no profit.
There's no profit. So I started a consulting business to kind of offset my income. Mm-hmm. And so I did for the first 4 years of the Neighboring Movement, I wasn't paid in any meaningful way. Mm-hmm. And so I did consulting and training around communication and conflict. And so HR departments would hire me to come train staff and do stuff like that, do supervisors.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. So
was that mostly local or kind of wherever?
It was mainly local, although I actually have a few clients that were not local. I still have a couple that I've maintained because they overlap with our neighboring work. And one of the things that at the Neighboring Movement we do, we actually still work with churches around the country. And so I still have some trainings that I work with basically pastors that are coming into the United Methodist system. So,
perfect.
Yeah.
So Neighboring Movement. That's what we're here to talk about. Talk a little bit about that. What kind of spurred that? What is it? What kind of started it off? Go from there.
Yeah. So the neighboring movement, when it first started, it was just my wife and I and some our across the street neighbors. We wanted to, well, I mean, the kind of truthful answer is we were all working in churches and getting super burned out. Mm-hmm. And we were like, this sucks. And we want to do something else that feels meaningful and like fills us up. Sure. So we started meeting and just kind of decided like the most meaningful and most authentic thing we can do is be good neighbors. Mm-hmm. And for us, that had nothing to do with like, we're not trying to get people to go to church. We don't care if people are Christians. So we're a little bit different. And like that, like some people hear Christian and they think a certain thing. Mm-hmm. That's not really our shtick at this point. But we wanted to be good neighbors because that felt really genuine to us. Right. And so we took that so seriously that we literally like moved into the same block together, mm-hmm. Just south of downtown. And we just started working in that neighborhood. Our neighborhood, the SoCe neighborhood, SoCe is short for South Central. And so it's SoCe, SoCe. And its main corridor is South Broadway. And so anybody who's lived in Wichita for any amount of time, South Broadway has certain connotations that come with it. And mm-hmm. it's usually known for the things that are wrong with it, the right. broken parts of yep. it. And what we did when we started just connecting with neighbors is we realized there's some like amazing networks of people in the actual blocks where people live that are taking care of each other and that support each other in ways that nobody's really seeing. Mm-hmm. And maybe this neighborhood that's usually known for what's wrong with it actually has a lot of things to offer. And what if we organize the neighborhood around those things? And we started doing that work kind of haphazardly, I would say. Mm-hmm. And a mentor was like, hey, if you guys like form a nonprofit, I'll give you $2,500 so that you can do some neighborhood projects. And we sure. were like, $2,500? Oh my God, yeah. That's like the most money ever. And so we did it and we formed a nonprofit and we were just planning on like doing neighborly things in our neighborhood yeah. while keeping our day jobs, yep. right? That yep. was kind of the goal. And slowly what we came across is that the model we were using actually is already a globally used community organizing model called asset-based community development. Mm-hmm. And so this is an approach to organizing communities based on their strengths. And it's been literally used around the globe. And there are people in every part of the world who use this to help communities grow stronger from the inside out. Mm-hmm. And when we kind of stumbled on that, we realized, wow, this gives language to what we've already been doing. And that structure helped us to then like really frame in a unique way, like our approach to, we're doing it from a neighboring approach, not just an asset-based approach, mm-hmm. like really local, like think of your front door and the eight front doors closest to it. Those are the people we're really talking about. Mm-hmm. And we took everything we were learning, put it into some training modules, and all of a sudden our little nonprofit that was just for our neighborhood started to grow. So we developed a training program for churches, which is called the Good Neighbor Experiment. And then we have another training experience called the Community Animator Network for individuals. It's like a continuing education, like professional development type thing. And then people can actually go on and do a local project wherever they live as well. So it just has grown from there. And now we are still active in the neighborhood. We actually are trying, we're not trying, we have bought some properties yeah. on South Broadway. And one of our main goals over the next 3 to 4 years is we're really trying to like reshape what South Broadway looks like in Wichita.
So, awesome. No, I love that you're kind of going to the root of it. Like you mentioned, like, I mean, again, I grew up in Andover, so like
yeah.
West Wichita was like anywhere past Rock Road. So it was like, I came downtown to walk around, but like we didn't go to the West Side. So it was like, yeah. we went downtown, but it was like the good parts of downtown.
Sure.
So there definitely is that kind of perception of Broadway and some of those areas. So mm-hmm. it's cool that you kind of went to the root of that. Was that strategic? I guess, did you move there thinking, I don't know, there's things yeah. wrong with here, we can fix that? Or like, why did you pick that neighborhood?
Right. So our co-founders, their name's Matt and Catherine Johnson. Mm-hmm. They had already through some like things that they were reading, and it was motivated out of our faith, our Christian faith.
Yeah.
They were reading some things around like these are some movements that if people want to look them up, they can. So there's a Catholic worker movement. Mm-hmm. There's the Simple Way movement. These are some Christian movements that are kind of, they're not fringe, I guess, but they're like a little bit not mainstream Christian movements. That one of the things that you do in those is you say, we're going to go to the places that everybody else has been abandoning.
Yep.
And that in those spaces, we can, not because we're going there to fix them even, because there's something that we have lost touch with as humans when we just ignore these huge sections. So they had already started that journey and they were connected to the neighborhood already.
Yep.
And so when we decided, my wife and I were like, we're in it, let's do this. Then we were like, okay, we want to live really close to each other.
Yeah.
They had already had a house on this block on South Waco, right next to the river actually. And we were at a block party that they were hosting. It was like a front yard. Mm-hmm. And by block party is such an overused word. Like, this is not like bouncy house, shut the road down. It's like, we pulled our grill into the front yard. This is a party. That's it. Yeah. That's it. Right. Yeah. Anyways, one of the neighbors was there and we were like, yeah, we're kind of thinking about moving into the neighborhood. And he was like, you want to live in that house right there? He's like, okay, maybe. Tell us about it. And he had been the caretaker for this home that was vacant. And he literally took us over after the barbecue and we walked to the house and we were like, let's do it. So we purchased the house within that next month and then moved in. And this is the thing that I think people don't realize. It's like, people are like, man, you guys are so kind and generous living in that poor neighborhood. That is not it. I mean, even from just a pure economic sense, just so people can understand, like, I bought my house for $60,000. It is 4 bedrooms and 2 bathrooms and has a 2-car garage. My backyard backs up to the river. The walkway is right there. I can get to the baseball stadium on my bike in about 5 minutes. Like, it's a sweet house. We invested some more to remodel it. And now it's like exactly what I want. I've already made back the money and equity on the house. Like, there is a reason that we do this beyond just like, oh, we're such generous, good-hearted people. Yeah. Like, it's a home we can afford. It's a bigger home than we could have afforded if we wanted to go live in Andover or anywhere else like that, right? And so we're trying to market the Soce neighborhood, not just as like, this is a place you go if you want to do good in the world, but also it's like just a place you can go and live and have a really fantastic life in Wichita.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and again, the river, I'm sure we'll talk about it a little later, but like, the river's super underutilized. So it's cool that you're right there and like, that's a super cool thing. I mean, obviously we can't have mountains here. We're not going to have some of the no, ocean, but we got a cool river.
Yeah.
And I think that's really cool.
Yeah, my son told me when he was younger, we were driving around and he's like, Dad, I really love that mountain. I was like, what are you talking about? He meant the ramp to get onto Kellogg. He thought that was a mountain.
And then blow his mind and go to Colorado.
Yeah, he's like, whoa, I didn't realize.
So the asset-based community development, I think that's cool. Like, you guys were already kind of doing that, but it helps once, I mean, I'm sure it was like, you knew what you were doing. You knew kind of the methodology, but it's cool to like actually have some like constraints and like, this is a thing. Like, it's got a name to it. This is what people do. How did you stumble across that? Was it like hearing about what other people were doing?
And it was very random. Like, literally, Matt, who's one of our co-founders, he was on like some email list from somebody, and they had an article about this person who was doing asset-based community development in Indianapolis. And it just so happened that that person was a United Methodist pastor as well. Mm. And through those connections, we reached out and made that contact.
Right.
And then the beauty of asset-based community development, or ABCD is how people refer to it, is that everybody in that community just is very generous with their resources, with their time. They share things. And so they very quickly were like, what do you need help with? We will coach you. Here's all these free things that you can just use in your trainings. And so, and you can go, anybody's listening to this, you go to abcdinstitute.org. That's where like the kind of all that stuff lives.
Yeah.
And you could spend weeks and weeks and weeks going through all of the free resources that are available there.
Very cool. Yeah. We'll have to link that up for sure. Make sure that gets shared. You name dropped a couple of kind of the initiatives or pieces of this. I want to walk through a couple of those. So talk about the Good Neighbor Experiment first. Talk a little more about that.
So the Good Neighbor Experiment is a program for churches, and we initiated it here in Wichita. The first cohort of it was just Wichita area churches. And it's a training program where a church recruits a neighboring team. And the big goal for us is we're trying to help churches to move from a place where they're attractional, where they're saying, come be a part of what we're doing, to being community connectors. And we think that the church thrives most when the community around it thrives. Mm-hmm. And so what we're trying to help churches understand is that a lot of the ways we've been trained to do church for generations has pulled us away from being community connectors.
Sure.
And instead of has turned us more into like entertainment. Like, mm-hmm. And there are some churches who do that really well.
Yeah.
But they're fewer and fewer. And, right. and most churches can't. They don't have the resources. They don't have the talent. They don't have the time. And so we're like, you know what? And we work in United Methodist churches, which are primarily made up of like old ladies. And so like what we're like, you guys shouldn't try to have like the coolest band in town.
Right.
It's not going to work.
Rock concert.
Yeah. It's not going to work. Instead, you should just do what you really love to do. And you know what a lot of old ladies love to do? They love to garden. They love to read books. And so we work with them to say, okay, we'll do this thing where we help them uncover their gifts and discover what they are. And we put it on a big whiteboard or something in the room, mm-hmm. and they'll see like, oh, there are four of us in this room who love reading books.
Yeah.
So we should start the first United Methodist of wherever book club. Mm-hmm. And we're always like, no. This is the difference. Instead of starting it here and forcing people to come be a part of what you're doing, how many book clubs already exist in your community? Mm-hmm. I guarantee that the high school would love you to lead a book club. I guarantee the library has a book club. The extension office has a book club. Instead, go and be a part of what those people are doing.
Sure.
And when four of you walk in and say, we want to join your book club, those people are going to be thrilled.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're going to be pumped. And then they're going to say, who sent you? And you can say, oh, we're doing this because we believe this is what the church should be doing.
Yeah.
We're doing this as part of our church. For us, that's like, it turns it inside out a little bit.
I like that a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and so the church recruits a team. It's about a 6-month, 9-month, if people stretch it out. It depends on their calendar, really. It's about a 6-month commitment for churches, and we've had about 300 churches around the country who've participated in that. We started it in 2017.
That's incredible, yeah.
Yeah, so.
Very cool. That's really good traction. Okay. And then I think the next one was Community Animator Network.
That's
right. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So the Community Animator Network in 2020, after everything had shut down, I had a friend who at another nonprofit who called me, and it's a national nonprofit. And he said, listen, we had a Kansas project that just got canceled because of COVID. I got $20,000. If you guys want it and you can get me a proposal by the end of the week, then nice. It's yours. And we had just canceled a bunch of stuff too. So I was like, well, I'll make up something.
Yeah.
So we literally like on my front porch, my other co-founders and I were like, what should we do? And so we came up with the Community Animator Network. Animator, the name, sometimes it throws people off because you're like, do they like make cartoons?
Yeah, little drawings.
Yeah, little drawings. No, that's not what they do. So animator, it's actually pulled from the British usage of animator is people who are community organizers. And it's like when you take a community that maybe is underutilized, mm-hmm. how do you bring life into it? How do you help it come alive? And that's why they're animators. And it's a 12-week training. And those 12 weeks, they get trained in asset-based community development. There's some specific homework projects that they do. Mm-hmm. And then if they finish the full 12 weeks and do all of those things, they become eligible for a year-long commitment where they do a local project wherever they live. And we've had 70 people across the state of Kansas do that. And some amazing projects have come out of it. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's unique about the Animator Network is that we pay the people to be a part of it. Mm-hmm. So it is not a volunteer role. It's a part-time job.
Yeah.
And we pay in the first 12 weeks, it's $15 an hour. And then it's $20 an hour for the year. And it's 5 hours a week. And we're like, we want you to think of this as something that you're like, it's high expectation. We want you to feel like I really am doing this full on. And so that's part of the reason we pay. We also pay because we want to recruit people who maybe can't afford to just give their time for free.
Absolutely, yeah.
Right. And so that helps us build some equity into that as well.
And especially if it's in like, quote, bad neighborhoods, like those might be the lower income people that could use the extra money and can't afford to just volunteer time.
Exactly right.
That's love that.
Exactly right.
So you mentioned projects. What do you mean by project? Can you give us
some
examples?
I'll give you some examples, some local and some that are outside of Wichita as well. So some of our all-stars that we talk about all the time. Emily Cruz, who started Somos First Gen here at Wichita State. It's a community of first generation Latina, Spanish speaking students who who all are supporting each other through this community that she created. And she did that as part of her time in the Animator Network. And so that's a really awesome one. We have a woman in our neighborhood, her name's Karen, and she's activating Lincoln Park, which is a park that has pretty much only been used by people who are homeless, which, you know, they need a place to go to, but like there's families in there that basically have not been able to use that park for like 20 years. Sure. And she's getting people to come back into it, which is amazing.
That's amazing. Yeah.
And then one of my favorite stories is a guy named Les from Florence, Kansas. Florence has like 300 people. And as part of in the Animator Network, you do an asset map and then you do, in his asset map, he realized there was all these people who had worked with kids or who worked in childcare at some point. He realized that the city owned a building from the old high school that had closed down that was not being utilized. And they actually started and created and launched. And now there is a rural childcare center in Florence, Kansas.
That's
because
amazing,
of his work, which rural childcare is hard to come by.
Yeah.
And so like to have that in that community, there was a woman in that community who was driving an hour. She would drive 30 minutes, drop her kid off, come back to Florence and work, and then do that same thing afterwards.
Crazy, yeah.
Because there's no way to, I mean, like,
what else are you going to do?
Yeah, it's like, if you want to work, you got to find childcare. So it's just awesome to see, like, and one of the things we talk about all the time is, like, we start with what's strong, but it's not because we're ignoring what's wrong, right? We start with what's strong because it helps us get to the next step of what we can try that becomes things like, hey, I opened a childcare center, which is feels like overwhelming if that's where you start.
Right. So. Yeah. That seems really big, but obviously it's doable.
Very yeah.
Cool. And then what is the 8 front door challenge?
Yeah. So the 8 front door challenge is really like the easiest way for anyone to participate in what we're doing. And so, one of the things about neighboring is that we think it is universal, meaning everybody can do it because everybody is a neighbor and everybody has a neighbor, no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. And so if you're listening to this right now, I want you to think of your literal front door where you live, right? And imagine that you're standing outside of it and thinking of, and just imagine like, what are the 8 front doors closest to you? And that could be if you're in an apartment complex, it could be if you're in a rural setting or like me on a city block, where are the 8 front doors closest to you? Maybe behind you or in front of you. And that those people are the people that your responsibility is to be a good neighbor to those people. Mm-hmm. And for us to actually create a cultural movement around neighboring, we're gonna have to each contribute a little bit. And so that gives us the scale of like, everybody can do that. And by neighboring, you don't have to be best friends with them. You don't have to invite them into your home. All you gotta do is know who they are, know enough about them that you know like what's something good they offer the world, and that you can give them your phone number and they can call you if there's something that they need. Mm-hmm. That alone would transform Wichita. James Chung did a report in his research several years back now, and Wichita was not a very neighborly city. In like the 120 or whatever cities that he had studied, we were in the bottom 10 and dead last in the 3 categories around neighboring, which were how many neighbors do you know, how often do you see them, and how often have you actually done something with them?
Sure.
And we were dead last in at least one.
I didn't realize that. Yeah,
yeah, we were good. It was not a positive outlook. And so Wichita, people think of themselves as neighborly, but that's not proving out in the actual research there. Mm-hmm. And so like for me, it's like, there's benefits to this beyond I can get an extra cup of sugar. Like the benefits go beyond that. It goes into like personal health. People are healthier when they know their neighbors. Mm-hmm. Safety increases when they know their neighbors. The community economic development grows when people know their neighbors. And so all of these are extra factors that like there's no, like if, if you're looking for motivation, yeah, I can really encourage you. This is going to help not just you, but our whole community, yeah, just by doing this simple task of getting to know your neighbors.
Yeah. And the bar is very low. It's not that hard. Yeah.
It's so low.
I've got three kids under 4 years old. And so anytime it's not freezing, we're outside in the front yard. Yes. And so we'd know. I mean, I can think of all the names of all those houses, yes, but like,
yeah,
it's not like I'm going out of my way even to like, right, we just know them because we're outside. And I think literally anybody can do this.
Yeah. And we talk a lot about like, it is the task of neighboring is simple, but it's not easy.
Yes, exactly.
And it's simple because it's like you literally just go say, hey,
yep,
right? That's simple. But it's not easy because it's countercultural. Mm-hmm. And it's countercultural because if someone rings your doorbell and you don't know, you weren't expecting somebody, like we're all like, who the hell's at my door? Like,
right.
And if, I mean, like I check my ring, you know, I'm not going to go to the front door before I look and see who's actually there. Mm-hmm. And so like it's countercultural, which makes it feel like an uphill climb sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I mean, countercultural movements are the funnest movements, like, right, you know, look throughout history, everybody wants to be countercultural. Yeah. That's the cool thing to do.
Yeah.
So we're trying to like, you know, use that as a selling point instead of feeling like, oh man, I'm so awkward when I go introduce myself to people. So.
Sure. I guess for people, since you're kind of the expert on this, what tips do you have for that? Because it can be awkward. That's true. What tips would you have for that?
Well, a definite tip is follow us on social media. Our TikTok actually has neighboring tips on it.
There we go.
And so you can go actually hear them. But the easiest tips are things that you're going to be like, oh, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. Bring people food. People really love food. And what I always encourage people to do is make your favorite baked good. Or if you don't like making baked goods, go buy them from one of the wonderful places in Wichita that sells them. And then when you take it to your neighbor, make sure you put a sticky note on it that has your name and your phone number. And all you have to do is say, hey, you know, you don't have to present it as like, we're going to be best friends forever now because we're neighbors. All you got to do is say, hey, we live next to each other and point to your house. I live right there.
Yep.
That immediately makes it so that all the awkwardness fades away.
It's not weird.
It's not weird. It's like, we should just know each other.
Right.
If you ever need anything, let me know. That's my phone number. Text me your phone number so I have it. Right? And that's it.
Yeah.
That would go, if everybody in Wichita did that, the whole community would be so much stronger because of it.
Sure. And it's kind of like the classic, like, I don't know, old movie thing, right?
Yeah.
It's like they bring you a plate of cookies when you move to the neighborhood. It's like,
exactly,
just do that with your existing neighbors. Yeah. You don't have to be new to the neighborhood.
And my other tip is, don't start with the scariest neighbors. Because usually whatever I tell people this, they're like, yeah, but this one neighbor I have. And I'm like, well, don't go to that house first. What are you thinking? Like, go to the people you already have some affinity with, you know? And so those folks will be happy to see you. So.
Sure. So how do people get involved with, is it just go ahead and go start talking to the neighbors immediately, which I'm sure you would encourage, or do you want people to kind of sign up formally through Neighboring Movement?
So if you go to neighboringmovement.org, the 8 Front Door Challenge is right there. And it is a step-by-step guide to meeting the 8 homes that are closest to you. Mm-hmm. And it also will, it'll encourage you to try doing a neighbor get together, which is just inviting those people to your front yard. You don't have to throw a big party. Do it as simple as you can. There's actually a list in that document that when you sign up to give us your email, you'll get a document. And it has a whole list of really easy ways that you can invite people to come and hang out and get to know each other. We also, as part of the 8 Front Door Challenge, we just started. We're going to launch a citywide neighboring initiative where the goal is we want to get 100 people to host a neighborhood get together by the fall of 2024.
Awesome.
And the goal of it is really like we're doing it this year as our beta test with 100 people because next year we want to do 1,000.
Awesome.
And so we're trying to figure out like get all the systems in place, make sure it works right, and then scale it up. That's important. Also, if you go to neighboringmovement.org, go to neighboringmovement.org/gala because it's fundraising time. And we have a gala coming up on May 30th. We're going to be at the rooftop on Niche, which will be fun. And it's, you know, for us, like the gala is, I resisted doing a gala forever because I hate galas. I think they're so lame. And they're always like, you know, cold chicken dinner and like guilt trip, give us money. And I was like, if we do this, it can't be that. So it's very authentic to who we are. It's very interactive and relational, and people are going to, there's activities we're going to make you actually probably fill a block map out, or, mm-hmm. you know, there'll be stuff you're going to do while you're there. And it's a really good time. And so we'd love to invite people to that, as well.
Perfect. And when was that?
It's May 30th. Neighboringmovement.org/gala, or you can go to the event page and it's on there as well.
Perfect. We'll link that up. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, everything goes exactly to plan like it always does.
Absolutely.
What does this look like? What have you achieved?
Yeah. So I'm gonna use, there's some stuff around neighboring in particular, but I'm going to go back to the neighborhood and South Broadway and talk about that a little bit. So right now we are pretty convinced that we can make a pretty big difference on South Broadway. The neighborhood of SoCi is downtown adjacent, the big biomedical campus that just got announced. We're less than a mile from that. My office is less than a mile from that at Lincoln and Broadway. And as the downtown changes and there's a lot of investment there, we want to hitch our wagon to that in a way that we can benefit from it and be responsible to the neighborhood around it. And so the neighboring movement right now is, we've just decided we're going to be a player in that game. And it's a big step for us in some ways, but in 5 years, I think when people, right now, if people are on Kellogg and they come into our neighborhood, it's because they made a wrong turn. And they're like, oh crap, where am I? This is not great. In 5 years, when they make that wrong turn, they're going to be like, this is a cool neighborhood. I might stick around.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm pretty sure we're going to, like, I don't know. I just am like, whereas when I moved in the neighborhood in 2014, I was like, that's too big of a problem for us to ever tackle. We're at a place now where I'm like, oh, the path to that is not as far as we think. And we have some opportunities to really make that happen. And so what I want people to think of is like, SoCi, the neighborhood, is a place that is pretty, a place that I could imagine going and being a part of and maybe even living in. So
I love that. I love that. I've got a few other kind of general questions I kind of ask everybody.
Yeah.
Before we get to that, is there anything else you want to touch on that I might have missed?
No, hit me with the questions.
Let's do it. So I stole these from Tim Ferriss and kind of some of my other favorite podcasts. But what is something you often recommend to people? It could be music, a book, podcast, something along those lines.
I'm going to go totally off. I'm going to shock you here.
Hit me.
Swoveralls.
Please go on.
Sweatpants overalls.
All right.
I am telling you. I got them for Christmas. It is a game changer.
Okay.
Sweatpants overalls. People have been wearing belts for far too long. It's time to ditch the belt and get some swoveralls.
Why aren't you wearing them right now? What are you doing? Well,
they're really unprofessional.
Okay, fair. You got to put a blazer over it.
Yeah, right.
What is your favorite failure in any aspect of your life?
Yeah. So at the neighboring movement, we free to fail is one of our mottos. We actually have a free to fail wall of fame on our office where we add new things to it on a regular basis. I would say my favorite failure. So we actually, I'll give you a podcast related one. We have a podcast, the Neighboring Movement podcast. It's not super active, but you can go check it out. And we'd attached several of the episodes to some of our curriculum. And this lady wrote us this long letter about how bad the podcast was and how we thought we were so funny in the podcast. But she said, all your jokes just drove me crazy and I couldn't even get through it. And I just turned it off. And we're like, oh, thanks. So not maybe a great promotion for the podcast, but, you know.
That's some of the best feedback that I've gotten. I write a newsletter and my wife put together a compilation of like all of the people like nitpicking my grammar and stuff. My favorite was like they opened the email with "Hey dum dum," and then went on to critique my stuff. And I was just dying laughing. So I'm like, I studied engineering. I didn't study English in college. I'm sorry.
That's amazing.
But it was pretty funny. What is your definition of success?
I would say success for me looks like. I probably say like harmony. That was a word that I'd kind of as in the new year, we kind of think about like what words we want our year to look like. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just really easy to feel like completely out of balance and like stuck in a bunch of ways that you are being pulled that you don't want to. And so I'm going to go with harmony. Success looks like I feel like I'm in harmony with myself, with my family, with the world around me, mm-hmm. and which means I know where I fit, I know how to contribute, and I also know where I need to like pull back and not overdo it.
Perfect. That's a good description. I don't think anyone's described it like that, so that's good.
Nice.
Tell me about a life motto you live by, or what is some of the best advice you've received?
A life motto I live by. Well, I'll go with this is. I mean, the neighboring movement. People are like, not that's work related. And I'm like, when you start a nonprofit, it's pretty much the same thing. Yep. It's all work, life, all the same. So the founding motto of the neighboring movement is that every person is gifted, and when they are invited to share their gift, they experience wholeness, and the community grows stronger. And to break that down a little bit, starting with every person is gifted, that means that even the people who, for like cultural stereotypes or for whatever reason, have been defined as needy, mm-hmm. they actually have something they can offer. Mm-hmm. And what's missing is the invitation to actually say, hey, we instead, you're not needy, we need you to contribute.
Yeah.
So it's an invitation there. And then when you do that and you are able to unlock and you like connect with somebody in a way like, oh, they really love doing this. You can see them come alive. Yeah. Like everything about them feels like it's just vibing. And it's so exciting when you lock into somebody using their gifts in that way. Mm-hmm. And it's clear like they're experiencing wholeness, and you can tell that the community around them is happier because of it too.
Yeah.
So trying to discover those gifts, connect them and mobilize them, that is all about what we're doing.
Awesome. I love that. What is a habit that you developed over the past few years that's most improved your life?
Oh, a habit. I'm going to go with naps. Mm. Naps, you know.
I love a good nap.
I had a lot of shame around like the fact that I wanted to nap all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, wait a minute. Maybe it's just a good thing to nap. So I have like, I can nap. I can do a 10-minute nap. I can do a 20-minute nap. I can do a 2-hour nap. I'm a napping expert. And so, yeah, that's a good nap is a habit I think everyone should develop.
Oh, yeah. Wake up refreshed.
Yeah.
My last couple questions are Wichita specific. So okay. What is your favorite part of Wichita or a hidden gem? And you can't say Sosi. So
oh.
What's your hidden gem in Wichita?
Oh man. Okay. Can't say Sosi. All right. Hidden gem in Wichita. I'm going to say this is, I don't know if this still counts as Wichita, but what could I say? The Bartlett Arboretum?
Yeah, for sure.
If you haven't been to the Bartlett Arboretum, there's something magical about being in those trees. And especially when they have concerts going, it's one of my favorite places ever.
Awesome. Yeah, that's a good one. We'll definitely have to link that up. Is there anything you wish Wichita had that it doesn't, or what would you improve about Wichita?
Yeah, I mean, I think about improving Wichita a lot. And so being good neighbors is obviously a key one. The other thing that, I mean, what do I, I think I wish Wichita just had a better attitude. Mm-hmm. You know, like I think people are just, we're just, have convinced ourselves that we're not as good as we are. And I'm like, no, we're great. We got it. We've got the things we need. Like all of the stuff that we need to be the city we want to be already exists here. And I just wish we could see ourselves for that. So, yeah.
No, I agree 100%. Something that a lot of people say about some of this stuff is Century 2. So I'm curious, as somebody that transplanted to Wichita and also lives very close to Century 2.
Yeah, super close.
How do you feel about Century 2?
Well, so I'll separate out the conversation around Century 2 and the building itself.
Yep.
I don't like when we have tickets to Music Theater Wichita, mm-hmm. and we're a huge theater family, so we go to a lot of theater. Yeah. It's not an amazing venue for theater. Like right. It's just not. And anybody who thinks that hasn't gone to a lot of theater. And so I think we could do better. Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I'm not, and I don't have any attachment to it as a building. So I'm like, I don't really care. As far as like the conversation around it, and like the way that all played out, I'm like so annoyed by politics in that kind of way that like, I'm just like, you guys keep fighting if you want. Like, there's a lot of work to be done and you're just distracting yourself from mm-hmm. actually good work. So I didn't really engage in that very much.
No,
so.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I actually took a tour of all the Music Theater Wichita stuff last year.
Oh, nice.
Because I'd been to like some of the Broadway Wichita shows, but like I was vaguely aware of what Music Theater Wichita did. I didn't realize how big of a production it was. First of all,
huge.
It's unbelievable and how many people they employ. And like, it's a really, really cool thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can tell the building is just very, very old
yeah,
and they deserve something better.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. Pretty interesting. All right, last question. What does Wichita mean to you?
What does Wichita mean to me? So I've lived in Wichita since 2010. My wife is from, she's not even from Kansas, and she, you know, came to Wichita, and we definitely were like, what the hell are we doing here for many years? And I think at some point we just decided we want this to be our home. And so I'd say that that is what it is to now. I mean, it is our home. Like I don't foresee us ever going anywhere else. So yeah, I'd say Wichita's home, I guess.
Perfect. Adam, thank you for coming on.
Yeah.
Where can people find more about you or the Neighboring Movement?
Yeah. So neighboringmovement.org. We're on social media, except for we're not on like the Twitter or X or whatever. Mm-hmm. But we're on Instagram and Facebook and LinkedIn, and we do still have our podcast, which releases episodes very rarely, but you can go back into the archive. There's lots there. And yeah, those are really the best places to find me. So
perfect. Adam, thanks for coming on. I was happy to learn more about this, and I'm glad to share it. So thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Wichita Life Podcast. Check us out on social media at Wichita Life ICT or our website, wichitalifeict.com. Huge thanks to Jake B for editing and producing our podcast. Have a good one, and we'll see you next time.